Good morning. Is that good? Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for the invite back. I think last time I was here, actually it's been twice. It was a year ago, and then it was 2 years before that, yeah. So I was talking to somebody, and we figured maybe 6 months I'll be back now, like 2 years, 1 year, 6 months. It's great to be here, and I have to introduce my wife, Pastor Tom did, but my wife, Chris, and I could say this year. I couldn't say this last year, but I could say this year, my wife of 50 years. So we've been married 50 years. She was 6 years old when I married her. I was much old. I was seven. So 50 years. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. God is so good. And actually, we got married. We weren't Christians. We weren't saved. We were just madly in love. And then within a year and a half, we were introduced to, you know, we met some people who took us to a Christian fellowship group. And the rest is history. We never looked back. You know, we never looked back. And I remember, I have to say this because my wife is amazing. And somebody, we went to this first Christian fellowship meeting, and again, we weren't saved, but we're at this meeting, and we're getting ready to leave. There was maybe 15 people there, and one of them said to Chris, all you have to do is ask Christ to come into your life. That's all you have to do. So I didn't know this because I was driving, but all the way home, she was asking Christ into her life over and over and over again, which is great. And then she said, but don't come into my life unless you come into Bob's life also, right? That was her prayer. And that's why I'm here. So she got saved first, and a few weeks later I did. But anyway, that's not why I came all this distance to talk about that. So I want to read. Maybe I'll just say this. This is the title that I wrote on my page here. Who is like unto thee, O Lord? I love the worship songs, as Pastor Tom said. They just edified who God is. And I think I want to talk about that a little bit this morning. Who is like unto our God? This is something a few weeks ago, I don't know whether it was a church service or what it was, and I remember coming home and thinking, this God that we serve is incredible. You know, and you would say, well, we're all believers. We all understand that. We've been saying that for years. But sometimes we just need to kind of step back and look at God for who he really is and realize there is none like him. We used to sing a song in Baltimore, There Is None Like You. I love that song. But actually, even songs don't quite cut it, do they? You know, songs, don't you run out of words? God is amazing. God is awesome. God is this. God is that. Our vocabulary does not even express really the glory of who God is. And this verse that I read, well, I just read it in context in Exodus chapter 15. And in Exodus 14, we're very familiar with, which is where the Lord parted the Red Sea. So now Exodus 15, God parted the Red Sea. The children of Israel escaped on dry ground. And then as the chariots of Pharaoh tried to pursue the children of Israel, God closed up the Red Sea and destroyed the army of Pharaoh. And so now it's chapter 15, and they're singing a song. The Song of the Redeemed is what my Bible calls it. And in the middle of this song, to give glory to God, Moses says in Exodus 15, verse 11, who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? That's gods with a small g. Then it says, who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, and doing wonders? I just love this phrase, like, who is like you, God? And, you know, I want to share, I don't know if you've seen this video, but there's a part of this, there's a video called The Privileged Planet. How many of you have seen or heard of that, Privileged Planet? Just a few, okay. I would highly recommend, you can go on YouTube, I think it's free. And it's this incredible video that was done in 2000, 2004. Now there's a book called The Privileged Planet that talks about how the Earth is in the perfect position in the solar system and in the universe. And it goes through all these different reasons. These guys who do it are like scientists and I don't even know, astrophysicists and all these astronomers. If the Earth was a little bit closer to the sun, we would all die. If the Earth was a little bit farther away, we'd all die. If the moon was a different size, if the Earth's rotation was different, and it goes through all these reasons why the Earth is the privileged planet and the only place where, they say it this way, carbon-based life could ever exist on this planet where we live. And so it starts the video this way. I always found it fascinating. So, in 1977, NASA sent out two spacecraft, I guess you'd call them, unmanned spacecraft, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. I don't know if, I don't remember this, but 1977, they sent them, and the purpose was to send them to the farthest planets in our solar system. Pluto, I don't even know if Pluto's still a planet. It is one week and not the next, not really sure. The bigger, the farther away planets, and they wanted to send these unmanned spacecraft to go there and circle them and just, you know, whatever they do, take pictures, you know, whatever unmanned spacecraft do. They wanted to get more information about the far away planets, okay? So they send these two spacecrafts out there. They're there for 13 years circling these planets at the far end of our solar system. And then when they finished their mission, they still had power left. In other words, you know, battery power or whatever. They were still, you know, functioning as space probes. So then they said, well, let's just send them into the far reaches of the universe to see how long they'll last. So they turned them and just sent them away into the, just let them go and let them. What's the right word? Send back data. You know, let's just see what happens. So they send them, and then at one point, I don't know what point they were reaching, like the fringes of something. So they decided to turn them around. Okay, well, one of them, they turned it around. So now, instead of facing outward into the universe, it's facing back. And at that time, it was 4 billion, with a B, 4 billion miles away from the Earth. 4 billion miles away. And so they turned it around, pointing it towards our solar system and our galaxy. And there's this picture. It's an incredible picture. The sunbeam going across the frame of the picture. And in the middle of it, there's like a pinprick. And that's the Earth. From 4 billion miles away, the Earth is a pinprick. And it's just this amazing shot, how the sun hit it and illuminated it. And it, you know, what is the point of that? So one point is the vastness of God's creation. This spacecraft was, like I said, 4 billion miles away. Turned around, caught a picture of our planet, which was the size of a pinhead. And so I looked up how many people are on the Earth in 2026, right now as we speak. And there's 8.3 billion people on the Earth with us right now, 8.3 billion people. So here's the thing. The Earth is like a speck in the universe. It's a pinprick. you know, whatever word you want to describe it. It's this little tiny dot that is traveling through the universe or traveling around the sun and doing all, and on it is 8.3 billion of us. Billion of us. And so this is God, this is the vastness of God's creation. And there's a verse in Psalm chapter 8, verse 3 and 4. It says, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon, the stars, which thou hast ordained." Then the psalmist says this in verse 4, Psalm 8, verse 4. "What is man that thou art mindful of him?" Isn't that something to think about? The vastness of God's creation. And again, this was 4 billion miles. Who knows where it goes? Who knows how vast it is, really? But here we are on a pinprick flying through this space at who knows how fast. All of us, the earth is rotating, all this stuff is going on. There's 8.3 billion of us here on the earth, and God knows every one of us. Like, who is like you, oh God? Like, who is like the Lord? I mean, come, like that's enough for me to fall down on my face and say, God, like I can't even believe that you consider me. What is man that thou art mindful of him? And it's not even that. You know, there's another verse that was pretty cool. Psalm 113, verse 5, it says, "Who is like the Lord our God who dwelleth on high?" Similar theme as Exodus 15. But then the next verse says, "Who humbleth himself to behold the things that are in heaven and in earth." Isn't that interesting? God is in heaven. This creation is so vast. I don't know what's out there. I don't know what, you know, but we, this is God's creation that we read about in Genesis 1, Genesis 2. And then it says, "Who is like you, God, that you would humble yourself to kind of," I picture like, here's the earth, and God kind of stoops down, humbling himself to look and make sure everything's okay on the earth and in his creation. I mean, that's kind of a weird picture, but I love that thought that God humbles himself purposely to see what is going on. And we could say it this way, in my life and in your lives, this God who created all this, who really could say, well, the earth, yeah, it is what it is. I created it. It's, you know, it's going to last for X number of years. It'll be fine. I don't really have to do anything. But God says, no, like my creation is there. You know, how can God be personal with 8.3 billion people at one time? Who is like you, God? Like, who is like our Lord? 8.3, not only does he know us, but we all know this verse, that if I'm up here, if I move too much, a hair of my head may fall out, like many others have over the years. And he knows it. I mean, seriously? That's it. That's said in, I think I wrote the verse down. Let me just, it's in Matthew chapter 10, verse 30, and Luke 12, verse 7, excuse me. "For the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are." So he's using it in relation to sparrows, like how the valuable the sparrow, like God knows when a sparrow dies or a sparrow does this. And he creates it to us. It says, "And God knows the very hairs of your head." And even thinking about sparrows, God knows every sparrow. Have you ever seen about 10 years ago, they used, I don't know, like in the afternoon, there was something going on. There would be a flock of birds fly over our house, and it would take like 15 minutes. I don't know if you've ever seen that. I don't remember it. But every day when I was coming home from work, they'd be flying over Bel Air Road, and it would take like 10, 15 minutes for this whole flock to come over. I mean, that's just a little picture of how many birds. And if one of those birds drops dead, God says, "I see it." Seriously? A flock of birds flying over Bel Air Road in Baltimore, Maryland, and one just loses it and dies, and you see it? And then God would say, "Yeah, and I see when you lose a hair on your head also. Because this is the God, this is who I am." It's amazing, isn't it? Who is like, Like, and I love when Moses said, who is like you, O Lord, among the what? Among the gods, small g. Who among you is like you among the gods? And like, well, let me just, I don't, but that's a, like, what are God, what are the other gods? They're a tree, right? What are they? And we'll talk about that in a minute. I just want to finish up this point and then I'll get to that. Sorry. You know, Psalm 139, for there is not a word in thy tongue, but lo, O God, thou knowest it altogether. We are fearfully and wonderfully made in Psalm 139. And I could read the verses, and I'm sure you're familiar. Like a lot of these verses we're familiar with. But when you think about what it means, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. What did God say to Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 1? Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you and ordained thee a prophet unto me. Like, that's how much God knows us. Like, before we're even formed in the womb, you know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. God knows our inward parts when he put us together. It's like incredible. Who is like this God? And how could you compare this God to gods with a small g? This God who knows us intimately. And that's the beauty of, like, again, can I explain this to you? I can't explain it. Like Psalm 139, there's another part of it that says, and I love this verse because I say it to myself a lot, such knowledge is too high for me. Like, it's too high for me. Like, okay, Pastor Bob, can you explain to me how God could possibly be in 8.3 billion this and that? And I'm like, I can't explain it. But this is our God. If he can create the universe, if he can speak it into existence, if he can keep this planet spinning through the universe at who knows what speed, and somehow it's spinning, shouldn't we spin off the Earth? I mean, centrifugal force. Do you ever go on a, what are those, remember those merry, what do you call merry-go-rounds? Those things in playgrounds, I don't think they're illegal anymore. It used to have in the school where you start to run around and, you, what are they called? Anybody know? Does anybody remember that? Well, not a merry-go-round per se, but yeah, it goes around there. The faster you go, the harder it is to stay on because it's throwing you off. I remember, I can't believe, you know, 5 and 6 graders, we used to get it as fast, I mean, it was crazy. But like I said, I don't think they're allowed anymore, but that's centrifugal force. Why aren't we thrown off the earth? Because God holds all things together. Can I explain that to you? I cannot. You know, this video, The Privileged Planet, is interesting because these guys understand a piece of it. You understand what I mean? Like, they understand a piece of it, of why the earth is the perfect place for mankind and the only place that life form as we know it, and I'm not talking Star Trek kind of stuff, but that can exist is right here. They know that. They can explain it. And the probability of it happening by chance is a number that would probably fill this room. It's infinitesimal, the probabilities that all of that could happen by chance. Like people, this is what they tell us. This all happened by chance. This is what the, you know, the elite tell us, because they can't acknowledge God. Well, we say, hey, it's easy for God. God knew exactly where to place the earth. It couldn't have happened by chance. The probability is so small that it could all come together like that by an accident. God knew what he was doing. God knows us. God knows everything about us. If I go up to heaven, God is there. If I go to hell, God is there. God is everywhere. And the really, just to take away from this part, is just how much God knows us and is concerned about us. He is almighty, all-knowing, all-powerful, everywhere present, knowing us before we were formed in the womb. And you would say, listening to this, why would people decide not to worship God? Like, how could you listen to that? I'm not talking about us, because you're here in church to hear a message like this and to sing these songs that we sang about the glory of God. But the reality is, it's crazy, but mankind has rejected this God. For the most part, 8.3 billion people on the earth, how many of those are believers that have received Christ, that believe in him, that have put their trust in him, compared to 8.3 billion is small. Majority of mankind has rejected God. And what have they rejected him for? This is interesting. And I'll read it to you again. I know I really do believe you're familiar with a lot of these scriptures. But in Romans chapter 1, you know, the Apostle Paul talks very clearly about this. And when you read Romans chapter 1 in its entirety, and there's a great commentary on it by Kenneth Weiss, a Greek scholar, and he sums it up this way. I'll read this one verse in a minute, but he sums it up this way. He said, mankind has put God on trial. Meaning put God on trial to determine if he is worthy to be our God. Doesn't that sound crazy? And again, this is brought out in the Greek, and I just want to communicate more the spirit of what he said. But mankind has put God on trial and said, you are not worthy to be our God. Well, what kind of God do you want? If it's not this God who has created the universe, who knows you intimately, knew you before you were formed, you don't want that God. What kind of God do you want? And this could be the question that we could ask. Well, what kind of God are you looking for? Well, what does Paul say here? Romans 1, verse 25, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. Can you imagine? But this is the reality. Now, people will say, you know, I don't believe in God for many different reasons. They'll say it. But ultimately, the reason is because they have believed a lie and they worship something. You know, people say, I don't worship God, I don't believe in God. People worship something. Everybody does. Because it's in our nature to worship. And, you know, it's funny, just in teaching Old Testament historical books a number of times, the one thing you realize, and it's very clear in the Bible that, excuse me, that mankind is born to worship. It's a matter of who are they going to worship. And you can go back all the way through to the middle of Genesis chapter 6, Noah's flood, and you can go to Genesis 11, which is the Tower of Babel. What's the point? What do I want to say about that? Like idolatry was rampant in the world, and it always has been, and it always will be, idolatry. Now, back in this day, when we're talking, you know, back in the Old Testament, usually they worshipped false gods. They had names for them, Baal, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this is the god of the harvest, and this is the god of something, and this is the god of something. Nowadays, we are too sophisticated to do that, so now we worship other things, right? Like we could worship our wallets, like wallet, you know, we could talk to our wallet, because our wallet will respond to us the same way that Baal responded to those who worshiped him. My wallet hasn't spoken to me in years, you know. Every morning I say hello, and it's never responded. So, but this is modern day worship, and you could fill in the blank. You know, you know, it's not always evil things. It can be good things. Anything that takes the place of God is an idol in our lives. And it's incredible that mankind, also in Romans chapter 1, it says here, verse 21, just going back a couple of verses, because when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And listen to this, verse 23, they changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed beasts and creepy things. Here's this God that we worshiped this morning when we were singing, who knows us intimately. And here's mankind that says, I'm not interested in that. I'd rather worship an animal. I spent 2 weeks in India back in 1990, and I remember in the morning they have all these, you know, stall like places you can get something to eat, you know, the kind of street vendors, I guess you'd call them. And I remember there was a little pen, maybe, you know, from here to the chairs and maybe 10 feet wide, and there was a cow there, and it was hay, and it was a bell. And you could go and you could take some, for money, you put money in the thing, you take some hay, and you feed the god. Like it's a stinking cow. Sorry, maybe I shouldn't have said it that way. Forgive me. My wife corrects me when I say that. Okay, it's a cow. It's a cow. And these businessmen with suits on come there in the morning and they give some money and they take some hay and they feed the cow. They ring the bell and they walk away thinking that they just worshiped God? I mean, seriously? You have taken this God and turned it into that. Or a bird. Or you listen to Pastor Shubelli, who's been in Africa. One time he went and he sat down on a stone. And the tribe got angry at him. Said, "What are you doing?" He said, I'm tired. Sat down on a big stone. They said, "That's our God. You're sitting on our God." Can you imagine taking that God and now here's our God, a potted plant. At least it has.